Welcome back to the Bruce Salen Show, A Dad's Point of View, and thank you, Arnie Salen, for that really strange music. That's part of his DJ mix. He's into being a DJ. You can email me at bruce@brucesalen.com. You can tweet me at Bruce Salen, and you can listen to me and Dr. Jennifer Weberman right now. She's an accomplished therapist and parent coach, and she is an amazing woman, and I don't want to waste time with an introduction because she'll tell you where you can find her at the end of our segment. Welcome back to the show, Dr. Weberman.
Always, always a pleasure to be here.
So I gather this column sort of inspired some thoughts?
Yeah, just a little bit. I was thinking, how am I possibly going to fit all of this into our segment? But I think I can talk really fast to make up for it.
Okay, and
you
I'll try not to talk.
We'll both do the best we can. You were talking about pouting.
Yes.
I know you were talking about adults, but of course, as a parent coach and a child psychologist, I think about whining and pouting and sulking in children and how parents can deal with those behaviors effectively.
I'm very interested in hearing that. And the column was not just about adults, but it was about the fact that we pout. As Pastor Drew said, we pout as a baby by crying.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just an instinctual behavior. And then depending on how we're raised, the parents can encourage or discourage the pouting by their reaction to it, which I assume is what you're going to say. So let's hear what you have.
You know, knowing that it's normal and that nothing bad is happening, your child is just expressing himself in a very natural way. And although it definitely is irritating at times, it's a typical behavior, and it's really an opportunity to teach. So my list is divided into two separate lists. You know how I love my list. My first list is 3 points about being proactive, which means reducing opportunities that are going to result in that sort of whining and pouting. And then the second list is 4 points about what to do to address it in the moment. So being proactive is really important. Part of it is paying attention to certain times of the day that your child is just more irritable, or certain situations that your child is more irritable. Because when they're more irritable, they're more likely to do some of these sort of regressive behaviors. So maybe she's hungry. It's important to pack snacks on you, keep your children's blood sugar level stable. Boredom is another contribution. So, you know, if you've been dragging them around running errands all day, you need to be kind of realistic about, you know, what to expect of a child. Giving them a job to do to keep them occupied, like if you're in the supermarket, asking them to bag apples or putting things in the cart, playing a game like I Spy to occupy their mind. If you're sitting in a restaurant a really long time, they may need to just move around a little bit or do something to keep their interest. So all part of that is being proactive.
Hmm.
Very to reduce the opportunities.
I'm listening to your list, and I'm thinking of applying it to my wife.
Does she need to be occupied in a restaurant?
No, I'm kidding. But the thing that gets me every time I hear it is whenever a youngster says they're bored. Now, the examples you gave when they're being dragged along on errands is a real fair one. But when a child says they're bored and they're home, and at least in my home, and I think the vast majority of homes, there is so much to do, particularly with the internet connectivity we have nowadays, that I just go, how can you possibly be bored? But it is a problem. And I think the example you gave, I hadn't even thought of, but that is when parents do bring their kids along. That's very important. Plus, the other thing I want to underscore is that times a day are
mm-hmm.
different, and the hunger levels. I think it really stuff I hadn't even thought about. My older son basically wakes up grumpy, and that's just his body clock. So I know if I need to talk to him about something, I don't do it within the first hour or two that he's gotten up, which during the summer might be as late as 12 o'clock. But even then, that's because he's been up till 3, 4, 5 in the morning. So he's gotten a normal night's sleep, but it happens that he wakes up at 11 or 12 or whatever, and his body clock is off. All right, continue on. I don't want to miss a thing.
Exactly. So point number two would be to just really be careful with your nose. Nose are a trigger for whining and sulking, and so you just want to use them discriminately. So whenever possible, try to find another way to phrase. So, for example, they're asking for a cookie, and it's right before dinner. Instead of saying, no, you'll spoil your appetite, which tends to be a trigger, you can just say, cookies are for after dinner. So it's letting them know when they're going to be able to have the thing that they're asking for rather than this indiscriminate no.
Wow.
Another reason to be careful with no's is that parents often will turn a no into a yes because of whining. So you've got to be really sure that once you say no, you're going to keep it as a no. don't just say no impulsively and then think, well, I probably could have said yes in that scenario. Just be careful with your no's. Another and the third one on being proactive is just setting up clear expectations for behavior. So, for example, if you're going into a store and it has candy and you know your child always asks for candy, just set up clear expectations in advance before you even walk through the doors. Let them know what you're going there to buy and what you're not going to be buying. And then keep them distracted in the store. And don't bring them in there if they're really hungry, if the candy is going to be the trigger for them. So all that is about setting up clear expectations.
I try to do that whenever we go to Nordstrom's, my wife and I.
The shoe department?
No, right now it's Louis Vuitton. It's killing me. go on, I'm sorry.
That might be a losing battle for you. I don't know if these things are going to apply.
Okay.
So you've done all the proactive things, and you're in a situation, your child's whining anyway because, you know, they're going to do that no matter how proactive you are. You're just going to reduce the number of times. So here are 4 points I just want to make about what to do in the moment. Never give in. Never, ever, ever give in. When you do this, you are feeding the behavior. It only reinforces it. So
I like to say, I just want to say something. I completely agree with you on this, but I like to say that when you give in, or you relax a consequence, you are teaching and modeling behavior that is destructive to your child. First, you're teaching them that you don't keep your word.
Yes.
Okay, and you're teaching them that if they act out enough, you'll relax. Both of which are horrible lessons for them throughout their life. So if you make a consequence, I just could not believe strongly enough, you must stick to it.
Yeah, your word has value.
Yes.
And every time you change your mind, you're reducing the value of your word. So the next time you go to say something, your child's thinking maybe he means it, maybe he doesn't.
Right, right. Okay, continue, please.
Staying calm is really important. You react with a lot of emotion to their whining. Basically, what you're doing is whining about their whining.
Wow, that's so wise.
Feeds the fire. And long lectures, we've talked about this, the two of us, that adults tend to use too much talking and lecturing when they're addressing this behavior. So they try to use logic to explain why the behavior is inappropriate. You know, you can't always have everything you want when you want it. Life doesn't work that way. None of that is effective.
So you've been in my car recently because I just had a long one with one of my teens. And as it's going on, I say to myself, enough already. He got the point.
The voice in your head is telling you to stop.
Yeah,
but it's so hard to do. It's telling me
to shut up, actually.
Yeah, well, we love to hear ourselves talk, and sometimes we can't turn it off, but it doesn't work. They're not getting it. They're not going to stop whining because they see the logic of it. So what you really want to do is have a key phrase that you're going to use every time your child is whining. So an example of a key phrase, to give the cookie example, they ask for a cookie. They're not, you know, they're denied the request. They're now saying, you know, I really want it. It's not fair. I'm so hungry. I probably just annoyed everybody by saying that. You just say, I want to hear what you have to say, but I cannot understand you when you whine. Ooh. And you try again in your regular voice. And then you stop talking. Any attempt your child makes to adjust their voice because you've said to use a regular voice is rewarded immediately with your attention and listening. And that's when you say something empathic. And this is the most important thing. This is point number 4. We're so busy trying to stop them from being upset that we're not listening to what they have to say. So once they've adjusted their voice and they're trying to use a normal voice, you can say something empathic like, you really wanted that cookie, or it made you sad when you had to stop playing. You're not coddling them. You're not changing your mind. You're just showing your child that you get his world and that his feelings are okay. And that's really, really important.
Wow, that's really, really wise, Dr. Jennifer. I hope you're going to write this out and do a column for your website.
I definitely got inspired by your column to do one for myself. May take until after Bermuda, but I definitely want to do one.
A little aside, that's because she's going to Bermuda per soul for her vacation this summer. And not coming out to the West Coast to visit me. I can't quite understand why that was a conflict. I mean, Bermuda or Bruce? Bermuda or Bruce? They're both bees.
They're very equal.
Yeah. I wish you a great trip. All right. Anything more before we wrap up?
Yeah. I would just add as a last point that the modeling piece is really important. Parents, we need to ask ourselves how we're handling our own frustration levels in front of our children. how do you communicate with your partner? Are you using calm communication? Are you flying off the handle? Are you using passive-aggressive communication? Because we cannot expect children to handle frustrations better than the adults in their immediate environment are. So really working on your own frustration tolerance and your own communication is going to help your children tremendously.
That's another important tip. It goes back to my mantra about, you know, everything we do and say and act on, our parents, our kids see. So how we interact and pouting or passive-aggressive behavior between our partners and ourselves is teaching. And it may not be teaching a good thing. My wife and I occasionally display those poor behaviors, and I and my kids call us on it now because they're 19 and 16. So they'll say to one or the other of us, you know, stop acting like a baby. And usually mm-hmm. when they do, they're right. My older son the other day was giving me what I would call, well, no, it was marital advice about, you know, how to please my wife. You should take her out more and make special plans. And it was like hysterical to hear him do that. But he had been
great feedback.
He's right. But because my wife has been particularly irritated for a number of reasons, a lot of family been visiting her family. So she was on edge. And my older son is giving me advice about just taking care of her. And I thought that was good. So we're nearly out of time, Dr. Jennifer. Please do tell our listeners where they can find you.
The blog is theparentingplayground.com, and on Facebook we're there under the same name. And on Twitter, it's DR_Weberman, and I'm always at Dad Chat every Thursday night.
Well, and I love having you there, and tonight's Dad Chat is our Father's Day Dad Chat, so it should be good.
Beautiful.
That's for our listeners listening live Thursday. And then next week we are having a special dad chat about summer rock and roll songs, favorite songs. So it's not even about parenting. It's just about good rock music that we love during the summer. And I have a special host who's a rock and roll expert for next week. Thank you, Dr. Jennifer. And we will be back for some closing remarks after these messages.
In the odds, what did they do? When everything looks so dark, you've got to accentuate the positive, eliminate the negative, latch on to the affirmative, don't mess with Mr. In-Between.